construction of Taxiway Charlie. That would be the brand new taxiway on the west side of the airport. It would be what we call in the industry a design group for taxiway. It would serve very large aircraft, the Boeing 767 being one of them, the 75-foot wide taxiways. The FAA is favorable to this project. We need to have a user on board to use it. They just won't fund it. They won't build it and hope that they come. They want a firm commitment from a user to come in. But this is all part of the air cargo and logistics aspect that we really focused on in the master plan that sits in front of you right now. But this is part of it. I wanted you to visualize it and see what it would look like when it was all built out. Of course, we wouldn't have to build the whole thing right away. We could phase it, build a couple connectors to gain access to and from the runway. A couple items that will be coming in front of council in the next few years. Most recently, it'll be the fuel farm agreement between the city and Landmark Aviation. That's been with the attorney under his review. I understand it's coming into my email today from them. You'll be seeing that in the coming council meetings. We have an LOI for an engineering consultant. Every 3 to 5 years, we require the services of an engineering consultant, a dedicated aviation engineering consultant. They were the ones that 5 years ago, RSNH, the city selected them, and then previous to that, I think 3 to 5 years ago, they were also our consultant. The FAA requires that we have a consultant, an engineering consultant on hand. The LOI is on the street right now. We'll be going forward with the selection process in that regards. But I wanted to bring it to your attention because we're also looking for a partner in growing the airport. We want to find a consultant that can bring us leads, help us grow it economically, not just plan and design the runway. It's important to state, but that'll be part of the grading criteria when we come in and present to you our committee's recommendation on that. Foreign trade zone and customs. They're one and the same, but yet they're also different. We used to have customs. We've investigated trying to bring customs back to the airport. And to be honest with you, we don't have the business that we did before the economic downturn in 07 and 08 to justify that expense right now. However, we've been working with the ports in Jacksonville and in Tampa on utilizing what's called an alternative site framework criteria for a foreign trade zone. While we may not be able to get a customs agent here in Ocala, we can still umbrella under those foreign trade zones or those communities and offer the benefits that the foreign trade zone can offer for companies that wish to relocate into Ocala. It's not just limited to the airport. It's anywhere in Ocala. There are certain distance criteria. The south end of Ocala could operate under the Tampa foreign trade zone. The north end, of course, would be Jacksonville. Those are some of the issues that we're looking at when it comes to customs. Fixed-based operator time frame. I bring that to your attention because our current fixed-based operator, Landmark Aviation, has a contract to operate through 2018. Just a reminder, the fixed-based operator, they are essentially the concierge to the jets and the visitors to our community. They are who greets them first and foremost. It's who they see first when they visit our community. They provide the fuel, the catering, anything that the pilot or the crew or the passengers need. Their agreement ends in February 2018. We will be looking hard at the direction the city would like to take in the future as it relates to the FBO. The way staff sees it right now, we'll have three options, and we need to look at each one of those objectively. We could do the status quo. We could find another FBO on the street and bring them in. We could rehire Landmark. That would be the status quo option. The city could operate the FBO themselves. There's positive results in the state of Florida from large cities or quasi-governmental authorities operating the airport who also operate the FBO and provide that aspect. There's also a hybrid arrangement that we could do where the city could control the fueling operation but subcontract out the customer service aspect. So we're going to look at that in 2016. We're going to do it in 2016 so that we can figure out how we want to do it, so there'll be a seamless transition in 2018 when the current contract expires. That's my presentation. Quick overview of the airport. Things are going well out there. I'm happy to report.
Matt.
Happy to answer any questions.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me again, if we were to sell property on the west side of the airport, that money does have to go back into the airport. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The airport operates as an enterprise fund.
Right.
And in the eyes of the FAA, any money generated on the airport, whether it's through lease, concession sales, or land sale, that money has to stay within the airport budget and used for operations or expanding infrastructure.
So as soon as we get some of that industrial side sold, and you know,
it solves the $2 million question.
Solves the $2 million question. Makes Mr. Musley happy. He's a little antsy about that. So,
yes.
That was my main question, because I wanted to make sure it was clear that does have to stay in the airport fund and will help all these projects and expansions. Questions, gentlemen, for Mr. Grove? No. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any public comments on what's happening or going to happen at the airport? Okay, Mr. Brown.
And Matt, the test on this will be when?
Yeah, this is a good reference piece to keep in your library.
All right, item 3C on the agenda is research on establishment and operation of a public market. Pete?
He outweighs you.
He does outweigh me. Puny compared to him.
How often do you get this done, Matt?
Year and a half.
But how often do we have it done?
Oh, I'm sorry. Every 5 years or changes occur as needed.
Thank you. I'm sure I'll get to it by the end of this 5-year period.
And you'll stay awake the whole time, too, won't you?
Aye.
Good afternoon. Pete Lee from Community Development Department. As you'll recall, when the retail consultant, Bob Gibbs, presented the material on the retail study, one of the ideas that he broached to council was his feeling that if a public market were to be developed downtown or near downtown, it would be one of, if not the biggest attractor to the downtown area, attracting people. And you know, he described several other markets and talked about how they worked. And council asked staff to continue to do some research on public markets and bring it back for your review. So we started, there's a lot of information out there several types of markets. There are generally three types of markets. An open air market, which is like our farm market now. Typically they just lease space or rent space to vendors, and they set up once or twice a week. And they range in size. Some of them attract as many as 50,000 people a weekend. Some of them are relatively small. Ours is kind of on the smaller end of the sizes for those types of markets. Then there are market halls, which provide permanent locations for vendors. They're completely set up and with water, sewer, refrigeration. But some of them are a little more elaborate than others. Some of them look very much like a grocery store, like a high-end grocery store inside, like in Cleveland or Milwaukee. And some of them are a little more rudimentary in terms of the space that people have available to them. And then the biggest are the market districts like Pike's Place, Seattle, or Detroit's Eastern Market, which are a series of buildings and some outside area also that come into play. And they might run during the weeks, all day, 7 days a week. Some of them run periodically 4 or 5 days a week. But they're extremely large, and a lot of times they share space with wholesalers and warehousing. And by example, this is the Charleston market, the outdoor market. This is the West Side market in Cleveland, which is run by the Cleveland city government and not-for-profit Ohio City Inc., and they're attempting to attract some private investment. And Detroit's East End market, which is city-owned and operated by a not-for-profit. They do over $1 billion in sales a year at that market. One of the big questions that comes up again and again, and I had a lot of conversations on telephone with different people who are running markets in different places. One of the big questions is, to me, and I think for them, is where does the government involvement begin and end? And so I asked a lot of the people who are running markets, how did you do this? And how much was the government involved? And it ranged from none to they run the market. There are a lot of different arrangements. Colorado Springs is undertaking the market now. When I talked to the guy on the phone, he said, your government's actually interested in helping you at all? I said, yeah, at least talking about it. And he said, it's been three guys who actually have spearheaded it from the private sector to create the public market in Colorado Springs. So it ranges in level of support and involvement, as you'll see. And I'm going to go through some of these. The Milwaukee Public Market is a relatively new market, pretty nice looking on the inside. It's managed by Business Improvement District, budgeted through City Council, but no general fund money goes to the market. It's operated by 501c3, financed through the Business Improvement District and through some private funding. Oops. This is the New Orleans French Market. It's owned by the City of New Orleans, but it's also run by 501c3. In Ardmore, Pennsylvania, this is a pretty interesting story. It's financed by shopping center owners. It's all private, no public involvement at all. It was in an old movie theater. The owners of the shopping center went to the 15 vendors who'd been in that movie theater for 20 years and said, we want you in a better space, and worked a deal on the private side, moved them into this new building. Spartanburg Hub City Farmers Market, this one's run by the Spartanburg Nutrition Council. I think they had some government involvement early on in a support role, but it was handed off to them. Charleston City's market is mostly outside, and it's city-owned, but it has an outside management company. This is a lot of these markets in not even the bigger cities, in the older cities, are really old. Some of them date back to the 1700s and been continuously run. Some in the 1800s that have been continuously run. This is a really old market that had been run publicly. They switched to an outside management company. They did a lot of transitioning with stakeholders, groups, vendors, the community, and the people who were involved to transition to outside management. Flint, Michigan, a combination of indoor market hall with sheds for farmers. And this is really just to show that some of these buildings are real elaborate. Some of them are lean-tos and spaces that aren't quite as nice as some of the others. It's owned by the city. It's managed by not-for-profit, but they've also reached out to private investment and are seeking investors now. The questions come up, but there are a few questions. These markets are a lot different than retail, the typical retail market. One of the things is, why do people choose these markets? And the number one reason is that they love the experience. They also like the quality of the goods, the fresh produce, the fresh meats. A lot of farm, as you know, the farm-to-table movement that's going on attracts a lot of people. They know where the goods are coming from, but they really like to be with a lot of other people and love the experience, and especially at the places that are well put together and create a positive public experience. Like I said, it's different from conventional retail markets. It doesn't typically have a revenue motive. The building is either built or reused as really a vehicle for the individual vendors to create businesses and to move forward. But it does create a public amenity and an inviting space for really, hopefully, all of the community. It creates a catalyst for spin-off businesses and complementary businesses if it's done in the right location and done correctly. It also supports, obviously, local and regional agriculture. And like I said, doesn't typically have a revenue. There are, to that end, there are some things that are really unique to this market that often get passed up when people create markets. A lot of times when people create the outdoor farm markets, they do well, and they say, we got to build a hall. But they don't really do this kind of specialized economic feasibility studies that they really need to do to make sure that they'll work. And a lot of times they fail. They fail for a lot of different reasons. They fail because they have improper mix of vendors. They fail because the vendors fail because they don't have solid business plans. They fail because they're in the wrong place or they're the wrong size. Or they weren't properly connected, and that's, again, to the wrong place, essentially. But the two main questions are, can the market attract sufficient vendors and customers to succeed? And can the market sponsor support a realistic development operating budget? And of course, that would mean they'd have to make sure that they conducted one. There are other questions this has become pretty specialized. There are a few groups out there who are doing public market research and public market consulting. These are some of the other important factors: visibility, accessibility, flow. Is it a natural gathering place? Can it be properly parked? What are the existing adjacent uses, and what are the opportunities for spin-off development next to this site?
Pete, can you comment on what the difference between a public market is and a flea market?
Yeah. These are more permanent. The tenants inside of these would be more permanent. In the indoor markets, like the markets that I showed, the Milwaukee and the Cleveland and these big markets, it's almost like a store. The market hall is like a department store. There is some competition among goods. Like there may be several produce vendors in the market. But typically, the other thing is there's a very close eye to the mix of goods. It's typically fresh food is at least a third, maybe more. Prepared food is around a third. And then the other non-edibles and craft-type goods, they try to keep them down to around 20% or so. They don't want those goods or used goods, like used clothing, wouldn't be in the market. This is for essentially produce and food and I'd say unique non-edible goods. Some of the factors for success, management's obviously very important, and they help determine the vendor or the tenant mix and the vendors. The location and the connections and the site selection would be very important. We would want it to be on neutral space, hopefully somewhere around either in downtown or very near downtown. We've talked about areas north of the boulevard and south of the boulevard, and that would require us to make the proper connections to whatever site we would pick or sites that we would pick. The economics and the management company working with the vendors to make sure that they have solid business plans and can afford the rents. There are sometimes that rents need to be adjusted. Those things are very important. And typically these things have a mission. A lot of times it is an outlet for the farmers. It's a lot of local, it has to have local vendors. It doesn't work with regional or national vendors. It's meant for local vendors or near regional vendors. And it's a lot of money that transfers hands in the local community. And then health is another one of the, oftentimes, the missions, healthy food and healthy food opportunities. A lot of times when the markets get successful, they spin off. Some of the markets that I showed have spun off to two or three places in smaller volume. And some of the things that we'd have to look at, as I went through the research, these things range between 6,000 and 250,000 square feet in size. I would think that we would be towards the lower end, not quite 6,000. It would have to be bigger than that, I think. Maybe 15 to 25 would be viable. But I don't think that we could run 7 days a week from talking to the people who have talked to run the markets. They say that overextending the market a lot of times is bad for it, but probably three or four day a week market. And these are some of the feasibility studies that are done. Like there's a group called Project for Public Spaces. Markets are a big part of their agenda, and they would help in the consultancy process with people who wanted to do a market with essentially those three high level categories. What's the vision and feasibility assessment? They'd help you develop the concept and help get it implemented, which would mean leasing up to vendors and beginning operation. So we talked about what might be logical next steps. We can develop a stakeholders group like a lot of the other projects we've done in 2035, go out to the people who we think are stakeholders, get them to the table and come up with the plan. We can do a formal solicitation in the form of an RFP for someone to start a market. We can do informal solicitation. We can talk to the groups like CP, DBA, and some of the other groups around town and talk about whether they're interested in participating or helping us do this. We could hire a consultant, do a feasibility study, or we can do nothing. Any questions?
Who's first?
Go ahead.
Mr. Mullen. Have you been to the one in Nashville in North Carolina?
I haven't.
They have gone. I guess it must be 150, 200,000 square feet, but they have metal buildings that run 100 feet, 200 feet long. Then they break, then they have another one. And they have, like you said, they run it like 3 to 4 days a week, but they have people come in here that make specialty in pickles and, you know, but it's lined up and it's packed. And then the one in Savannah, they used an old train station for a market,
yeah.
Which intrigues people because they've got an old railroad engine there, you know, and stuff like that.
They did something similar in Spartanburg. In Hub City, they used that rail siding, the same
right.
thing. They used the cover.
Right. But that one in Asheville is really, really something to see. Mm-hmm. Mr. Mayor?
I've been to two of the ones that you've shown here, the one in New Orleans, and I've been to the one in Charleston. City markets many times. And you're right, as far as you're talking about, some of them are stores and then some of them are on this end that you've got pictured here are a little bit different, but they're more permanent based. They're not just, you know, showing up on a certain day and throwing a stand out there. I mean, they're there.
Right.
That's their business. If you did it, and then the other one I would reference is Faneuil Hall in Boston right. underneath there. I mean, that's a great, you know, historic structure, and there's a market underneath there. But if you did it, I would do it on the North Mag area, and I would build a building that very similar to maybe this one in Charleston, but it would have to look like Ocala. I wouldn't put metal buildings or something out, and it wouldn't, and you would not let it turn into a flea market, because that's exactly what people are going to think it is, unless you are very clear that that's not what it is.
If the site plan got through and it was metal buildings, I think the city manager would be over in our building saying, who did this?
Yeah, we would do that. So, I mean, I think it's a good idea. It's just, what's the cost? What's our involvement in it, et cetera, et cetera?
The mechanics of it, I think, are a little bit difficult. A lot of times, like I said, it's how big does the farmer's market get and then what happens next? Our farmer's market's operationally doing well, it looks like.
Right.
But, you know, you have to get critical mass for however many days you're gonna do this for. You've got to have it.
Can you go back to the slide about what to do next?
Yep.
Okay. Yes. Hire a consultant and feasibility study would not be one that I think we need to do.
Okay.
I would like to at least develop a stakeholders group and, you know, and get some input from, yes, let's face it, some of the people downtown, yeah. North Mag, yeah, you know, that whole area, and get their input on it also. But I think it's got good potential to, I think it'd be a nice addition to our city.
Yeah, it would almost be like, a working group.
Yeah.
To try to get to the next step.
Maybe you can twist Mr. Schott's arm. And be
I don't think I'll have to twist.
If he can hear us. Mr. Musley?
Yeah, I think I'm very much in favor of developing a stakeholder group and then getting some solicitation. I think one would be some of the better vendors at the current farmer's market.
Okay.
And to find out from them, you know, if any of them have the wherewithal or the wanting to make this into a more permanent venture, where they were open, say, 2 or 3 or 4 days a week.
Okay.
But I think the key thing is developing the stakeholders group. And while I'm not in favor of hiring a consultant to do a feasibility study, I think we definitely need to know, you know, will this thing, could it fly? Would it support itself after, you know, the city makes any infrastructure, you know, contributions?
Mr. Walden?
Pete, I wasn't referring to a metal building for county.
I know.
Okay.
I know you weren't.
Okay. The other thing I was thinking about, there's a building over on across from Target that's empty.
The big building?
Yeah. Got plenty of parking and plenty of space in there for a market. It's already there. But the development of the stakeholder group is where I would.
Yeah, we have several buildings that, you know, we've looked at.
You're familiar with the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It used to be a flowers, a big thing, you know.
Fertilizers.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think the idea was to get it somewhere near the downtown core.
As close as we can. We'd like to. You know, it'd be best if it's on neutral ground and people can walk and it creates spinoff.
Right. Okay. Any more questions for Mr. Lee before we go to the public? Okay.
Thank you.
Do we have any public comment? Hello, Mr. Schott. You need a name and address?
Ted Schott, 328 Northeast 1st Avenue. I can't come without saying hello. a couple of things. The DBA has been in support of a public market even before the report came back and said that you probably can't get a grocery store downtown at this point, but you can definitely get a public market. We see this as addressing a couple needs downtown. The first is grocery store concept. If you're going to get residential downtown and walkability downtown, people need a place to shop. The second is right now downtown lacks a counter food service. There are places to eat downtown. There are wonderful places to eat downtown. If you have 5 minutes to grab a sandwich, there are three or four within downtown that you can potentially get to get your sandwich and get out of there. This would address that as well as having a restaurant inside. At least that's the concept. Next issue up is the farmers market. It is successful. We enjoy running it. We appreciate you allowing us to run it. The one thing that we have seen, though, having been removed from the square, it is not as successful as it was when you had a shade canopy above you. Our vendors understandably, get hot out in the sun, so we're not as favored as we used to be. And the other problem that we have is farm market needs a permanent home, and this ties into that. When this came about as an idea, we took this idea to both the city and CEP. CEP said, yeah, we looked at it. We'd be interested in discussing how we could move it forward. The pitch to CEP was, look, this is the non-technology aspect of the power plant. The power plant is to get those high-tech jobs and develop that industry here in town. This is the low-tech, develop stores that would go in downtown, whether it's a cheese shop, whether it's a wine and cheese shop, whatever it might be, give entrepreneurs the ability to get into the market without having to commit long-term to rent, those types of things. On the issue of where you put it, no matter where it goes, I personally would be in favor of it because I think it would be a great thing for our city. The DBA obviously wants it downtown. That being said, I can foresee a problem putting it anywhere near 200 where you have a number of restaurants and a number of grocery stores that will be saying, hey, why is the city getting into the business of competing with us? If you keep it downtown, you somewhat eliminate that because having additional restaurants downtown, the report says that we can handle it. We don't have grocery stores downtown. That would be one of the things we're trying to address. The one thing that I would ask you to do, if you intend to move this forward, and I think you are correct, putting together a group to try and steer it would be a good thing, but I would ask that you at least look at the possibility of asking CEP to kind of serve the same role that it serves with power plant, where it gets the government involvement, it gets the individual involvement from downtown, ask for people to be on the board and those types of things. But it is the management arm. The reason why I asked that without having DBA approval as a board, we don't have staff that can take this thing and run with it. City staff is, as far as I can tell, overtaxed with the amount of stuff that the DBA asked them to take and run with. CEP has said in the past that they do have staff that can run with this. So I would ask that you ask staff to get CEP involved and let's try and, in this board that we're going to create, have CEP staff start to make maybe move that ball down the field for us a little bit.
I would agree with you. That's a good idea.
Thank you.
Any further comments?
I agree with you too. I think we need to have them involved.
Any other public comments? Is that it for today?
So let me just summarize the intent of council today on 3A, which is the review of the draft waste transfer station ordinance. My sense is that council wanted staff to bring back the proposed ordinance for council consideration at a subsequent meeting.
But I want you to look at the buffering.
The distance. That is correct. Thank you. On item 3B, this is the establishment and operation of a public market, was to develop a stakeholders group, including the CEP, to see if we can't kind of map our way to the next step, the next course. Mm-hmm. I have one other item that's unrelated to the three topics. The council has right now a work meeting planned for June 10th. This is Tuesday. I'm wondering if council would be okay with moving that back several days to June 13th. That's a Friday. Again, going from June 10th to June 13th. The topic of that work meeting was twofold. One was a budget workshop, and it also intended to have an audit committee report.
Can we do it any day other than a Friday?
We can do it on the June 11th, which is a Wednesday, one day. What's the pleasure of council?
I can do either.
I can 11. Do either.
The 11th, though, is the 14th. That'll have to be rescheduled.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. I hate to reschedule 14. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I won't be here on the 13th, so.
Hmm? What about, what's the Thursday? I don't have my calendar.
12.
Staff's got a all-day, all-hands conference. What if we did it? Hang on a second. What if we did it right before the city council meeting on the 17th? Had a meeting just before the regular meeting on the 17th.
That might would work.
That would work.
How long do you need?
The budget meeting will last about 30 to 45. The audit committee, probably about 15 minutes or so.
Can we make the council schedule somewhat light if we could?
Sure, sure.
You got the FMPA meeting. No, that's just your meeting that day.
That's just that morning or that afternoon, yeah. Yeah. Diane, the audit committee, 15 minutes, 20 minutes?
But I thought we're going to talk about several issues, so I was thinking probably 30 minutes to maybe 45.
30 minutes.
Mr. Why don't we go back to the original date and just keep it? And if I'm able to be here, I will. If not,
okay.
Somebody can keep me updated, I'm sure.
That's on the 10th.
Mr. Musley, you know.
Yeah.
Well, let me do this. If the auditors are okay with the 17th, let's go 17th. If not, we'll keep on the 10th.
Okay.
Okay, that's good. Yeah.
That will
help you.
Okay.
If I'm able to be here, I'm able to.
Okay. That's all staff has. Thank
that's
you.
All? That's all we have today?
You're welcome.
I'm like a big age student. Anyway, all right, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Take this with me.
Well, we ought to take it with you as much time and effort as they. They spent that thing together, you know, at least act like we're going to read it. I'm sure you are. Probably cover to cover.
My youngest said, got to earn it.
Sell something.